If I say to you Macbeth and opera, I can guess what might come to your mind, particularly you, a highly intelligent and plugged in, curious about many things, WFMT listener. And if I say the name Ernest Bloch, you can probably just hear Yo-Yo Ma playing the Shlomo, the Concerto for Cello and Orchestra, by this Swiss-born, European-based in the key early years of his life, but then American composer through the end of his long life. He died in 1959, almost 80, in Oregon, where he had made his base. And maybe some of the sacred pieces, a sacred concert, some of the Jewish-themed pieces. But what if I told you that Macbeth is also the only opera, the only published opera, completed opera, by Ernest Bloch, and that it's going to have its Chicago premiere either 114 or 95 years after it was composed and published, depending upon which version you're talking about. And it's going to have that premiere September 13th at the Harris Theater. It's going to run for four performances through September 21st, and I bet you can guess that that must mean Chicago Opera Theater is opening not only the opera season in Chicago this fall, but the entire classical music season with this production of Macbeth by Ernest Bloch. And we have with us the Mindermast, as the Monty Pythons would say, the mastermind, the general and artistic director of Chicago Opera Theater, Andreas Mitisek, who is serving for this production, in addition to being the producer, as the stage director, Francesco Milioto, who's Giovanni d'Arco, Joan of Arc, done that one by Verdi last season. Wasn't able to join us today, but you've heard and seen Francesco in many, many venues in and around Chicago. And then we also welcome Mr. and Mrs. Macbeth. You all seem to get along so well. Don't be fooled. Edmund Ford and Susan Hansen. And are you making Chicago opera debuts, Chicago debuts?
It's my debut with the company. I sang the COT Gala last year, but this is my first stage, my stage debut with the company.
Right. Okay. And Susan?
And I'm returning. I was Giovanna last.
Oh, that's right.
Also Madeline Usher, so I'm thrilled to be back
right,
for the
right. Your
time.
Hair was really different in the fall of the House of Usher.
Yes, it was.
And you were freaky.
Yeah. I like to say it was 1,000-year-old bedhead.
So from Philip Glass to early Verdi to Ernest Bloch, you're doing all the mainstream.
Yeah. Trying to hit them all.
Andreas, tell us about this work and tell us about how you brought it first to Long Beach Opera, where you also Mindermast things, and now to Chicago Opera Theater.
Well, as you said before, Andrew, you know, when people talk about Macbeth in the opera world, most of us think of Verdi, and I was wonderfully surprised when I found Ernest Bloch's Macbeth, because it is so different the way he approaches to compose that work than Verdi did. It's very close to Shakespeare. In our English version, you find a lot of the original Shakespeare words, and the drama really happens similar that we know, like Wagner, Richard Strauss, a lot of the emotional context really is happening in the orchestra.
And when you say your English version, we should make it clear that Bloch himself wanted this to be produced in English because he had taken the libretto as much directly from Shakespeare as he could, but after the original version, which was done in what language?
French. He collaborated with his close friend Edmund Flegg, who only wrote one other opera libretto, which was Oedipe by Georges Enescu.
Right.
Very interesting.
Right. So he worked with the specialty composers, right?
Yeah.
And that was done in 1910 at the Opera Comique in Paris, and then the new version was created, and Bloch ran into some timing questions that many, many artists ran into, but he really ran headstrong into them because there were some possibilities to do something in Germany in the 30s. That didn't quite work out for a Jewish composer. And then in Italy, in Rome in 38 or so, and I don't think Il Duce was very keen on an opera about a figure who was power mad and brought himself down and his country around him. So that didn't happen in Mussolini's Italy.
Performances got canceled. And I think, you know, it's actually a great testimony for the importance of art. You know, if leaders feel threatened by operas, I think we're doing something right. He translated the opera with his friend Alex Cohen in the 1950s into English. And then there were some non-professional productions of it, but really Long Beach Opera in the U.S. was the first company that produced it. And Chicago Opera Theater, you know, following right along.
And I, by chance, saw the world premiere of the English version in 2003 at the Theater an der Wien in Vienna. And I was just knocked out, and I had been with the Wall Street Journal in years before, and I knew some people to contact there, and I wound up writing probably the only U.S. review of that production. It was Donny Ray Albert as Macbeth, and I'm trying to remember who Lady Macbeth was, and I'll remember it at some point. But the whole thing, Bertrand de Billy was the conductor, but the whole thing just knocked me out, and that's another way that art is so powerful, that an opera that nobody knew about and that nobody had heard could 100 years later come to life. I mean, isn't that really what the artist's work is? It's, yes, you want to connect with today's audience, but once you put something down on paper, the idea is it should have its own life, no?
Yeah, and it certainly does. And I hope that after these performances, other opera companies will start looking into it as a really viable option to have a Shakespeare opera, another Shakespeare opera.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk with our two singers who are basically the cast of the opera. I mean, other people, but it's focused on the Macbeths.
Largely, yeah. The interpersonal relationships, the emotional and psychological constructs. It's very, very much focused on how we move through drama and through space.
Enman, tell us about the first conversation or conversations that you had, emails, whatever they were, with Andreas about doing this opera that you had probably dreamed of doing since you were a small child.
You know, as so often happens, you know. Well, because it's Andreas, when he contacted me and said, well, would you be interested in singing Macbeth? The first thing I thought was, well, this couldn't possibly be the Verdi because it's Andreas. So there must be some other Macbeth that exists somewhere in the world.
Once he says, hello, it's Andreas, you know that it's going to be something interesting, challenging, and unusual.
You know to take it left of center because it's not going to be center. It might be right. It might be left, but it's not going to be right down the middle, which is, of course, why, you know, he is who he is and does what he does. So when he said Macbeth, I said, sure, sounds great. We're not talking about the Verdi, are we? He said, no, we're not. And then he sent me a recording, a link to re-recording and all of that, and I listened to it, and I thought, this is why when Andreas calls, you take the call. It was amazing. The music, the way that the drama is laid out. The best thing I can say is that the Verdi used to be my favorite version of Macbeth, beyond the play, even. Mm. And now I can say it's been supplanted by the Bloch.
Wow. Describe the music a bit. It's always hard to describe music in words, but describe it as you are experiencing it.
The first thing is it hits me directly in the gut. I guess that's the best overall description I can give. There's nothing really esoteric about it. It's not sort of this ethereal, ephemeral type of experience. It is entirely emotionally driven. As far as the sound of it, it's sort of Strauss tripped over Wagner and landed kind of in Debussy on steroids a little bit.
Not another one of those.
I know. It's just so common. Yeah. But no, I mean, it's very much of a mixture of different types of styles, but somehow ends up not being derivative. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly how to put it. It is his own style. It's his own musical language, but it does have what I would consider the strongest elements of all of those, particularly those three composers.
And it's not that shocking, considering when he wrote it and where he wrote it, that those would be things in the air.
Exactly.
But bringing them together and making them in his own way, sometimes it reminds me a number of his pieces of somebody driving a standard transmission, a stick shift, and driving too fast, but well, and somehow boom, 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 and thing meters change and voices change, but it still there's a through line. Susan, tell us a bit about how you learned about Bloch's Macbeth.
Like Enman, whenever I get I'm fortunate enough to get the call from Andreas, I usually jump at the chance because I know it's going to be a very interesting project and very artistically, musically satisfying. Mm-hmm. So, and of course, who doesn't love to play Lady Macbeth? And the Bloch is interesting how he portrays Lady Macbeth, or how much of Lady Macbeth in the Bloch is left unsaid. So she's even more enigmatic than she seems in the Verdi or even the Shakespeare. She's very, enigmatic is the word. Mm-hmm. And just musically, interestingly, her Lady Macbeth's music is not the meters. For instance, there's a section where the orchestra plays in 11/8 and I sing in 4/4.
Oh, easy as pie.
So it's what it does, it has this unbelievably unsettling quality it's hard to get it to negotiate properly, but it also, it's right. Brilliantly written, I think.
It's done to unsettle us.
Exactly.
And to show the unsettled place of Lady Macbeth in the world around her, right? So it when it works, it must be very effective. And, of course, it will work perfectly.
Of course it will, yes.
Right. Andreas, tell us about the rest of the cast and the what. Don't give away what it will look like and all of that, because I like surprises.
I won't,
right?
Because it's radio.
Okay.
I think the most important figures next to the couple here are, of course, the witches, which I think have a very prominent part in the Bloch opera. And in some way, they steer everything. they know everything before they make sure everything happens in some way they tell about. So it's the three witches, and then there are two male characters that in our production slip in some of the different roles that you know from the opera that you saw.
Right, but it's not as if you have a full range of Scottish kings and would-be kings wearing kilts and all of that. It's pared down by Bloch and then sort of pared down by you.
Yes, it is true. So the Bloch is three acts and it has probably two intermissions. And so our version is
compressed.
It's a 110-minute compressed, no intermission. Like Elektra in some ways, right? You enter the drama and don't leave it until it's all done.
Sure, and you don't, since it's not being done in Paris, you don't have to have a ballet in the middle that throws things off. You're Riccardo Muti, you can put the ballet back into the Verdi. Otherwise, you're really wondering, like, what happened? Where did all the anger and the blood go, right? Tell us about how you did this in Long Beach. Tell us a little bit about Long Beach Opera, actually. I know we've talked about it before a year or two ago, but people might be interested in a very different kind of company and one that increasingly you and the board are trying to take Chicago Opera Theater in this direction, too.
Well, Long Beach Opera is the other opera company next to Los Angeles Opera, which is a similar position like Chicago Opera Theater and the Lyric here. And in Long Beach, as at Chicago Opera Theater, we do the rare, unknown, new, all kinds of different works that are not standard repertoire. In addition, in Long Beach, we also do it often in places that are not theaters. So, for example, Macbeth, we did in a former terminal building in the port of Los Angeles. So, and I created in the building a seating that was around a big table, which is about 20 feet long. And so the audience was sitting left and right, kind of in the runway seating.
Facing each other. So if you've seen, as you say, a runway, a fashion show, or if you've seen the debates on television in the House of Commons in England, so you've got the two sides facing and then the action in between.
So it was kind of the audience was taking a seat at the table of the Macbeths. And so around that table, everything happened in the opera. At the table, on the table, and around the table. And so the concept was really the very intimate seeing of this relationship unfolding over these 110 minutes. And the difference to Chicago here is now that we have the Harris Theater, which is a beautiful theater, and we are very fortunate and happy to perform there. So the element, I will only say that much, we have capped is the table. And that will now twist and turn in many different directions.
Where was the orchestra in the Terminal Building production?
It was just set right on the side. There was a little, almost like a separate room, but you know, it worked very well with the acoustics. And what you also had is that the voices were so direct and clear and next to you. You know, and the first row was 4 feet from where the table was.
Unfortunately, the Harris Theater has wonderful acoustics, so you whether you are sitting at the table, you might still hear it as if you were at the table.
And still, you know, still the change in the idea for the Harris is making you feel like you're sitting at the table with them. And so we have some ideas and things that will happen in that regard.
Susan and Enman, and we should say Enman is spelled N-M-O-N.
Yes.
Is that because your parents were copycats and just wanted you to be the ninth Enman in your kindergarten class?
No, it's because I had a creative mama.
Okay. Well, it's good to have a creative mama, right? If you might say something about being in the Long Beach production and then shifting over here, and maybe also not that we want to put words in his mouth, but maybe there's some words that have come from the mouth of Francesco Milioto. What are some of the things he's talked about with you all as you're putting this together from a musical perspective?
Well, as far as the differences in production, the venue obviously creates all different kinds of the venue change creates all different kinds of challenges as well as opportunities. And without making any spoiler alerts, what Andreas has come up with to preserve the intimacy of the interaction between the Lord and the Lady, especially when they get into all their machinations, is pretty close to genius. I have to say, it's when the audience sees it, it's really going to be something that they probably have not seen before. Mm-hmm. And the effect that it will have on how the story unfolds and how the audience interacts with the Macbeths is going to be pretty powerful. As far as the theater venue, I will say when I knew that we were moving it from sort of an on-site type of performance to an actual theater, I was, tell you the truth, a little disappointed because I liked the whole mm-hmm. theater in the round, mm-hmm. unusual circumstances. It was kind of like acting in a movie as opposed to being on stage. But now that we have these new additions and these new ideas, it will feel, even in rehearsals now, I mean, the experience of doing it is something entirely different and much enjoyed. I'm really very much into it.
Susan?
I would agree with Edmund that the growth the piece has had because of the change of venue has been very interesting, and how the Macbeth relationship is growing, I should say, for us as performers. The Long Beach production, it was very tight. There were times when we were walking around the table where if an audience member in the front row had their legs crossed, we would hit them. Mm-hmm. So it was very tight. They got to see all the spit and all the sweat, mm-hmm. I don't think the Harris will miss any of that intimacy.
Right.
And I will also say that the Harris, I think, given its the design element of it, I think our production design will work very nicely in the space.
Have you gotten to a point in rehearsals where you have a sense of what Francesco was trying to?
Yes. Francesco, one of the things I love about Francesco is his attention to detail. And it's been really interesting, again, with the growth of the Macbeth relationship and my personal growth in the role, is to work with someone who has a new vision, new ideas on the score, and to incorporate that into, because it, of course, affects one's interpretation. So, he's wonderful to work with.
It's a question that you probably get from audience members all the time, but it's worth talking about a little bit. You learn a role, you do the role, maybe you do it in a long run, or you do it a couple of times in a couple of years at a company, and then you do the same role with people who have not just a different staging, but different musical ideas. Is it just something that over time you develop the ability to make that switch? Does it take a different concentration? Do you try to erase your minds and rebuild the part in your head? Let's go left to right again.
Right. It depends. I've been blessed during the course of my career to work with people who have a certain degree of flexibility, both conductors and directors, about doing different pieces, different ways, and in different productions. If I were doing, let's say, Don Giovanni, most likely everybody in the cast has done it 3 or 4 times. Most likely the conductor's already done it. So we all have a variety of interpretations sort of stuck in our repertoire to be able to draw on to make the piece come to life. I've been blessed to work with conductors who understand that there are certain things that just, as far as being vocally idiomatic, have to happen. So if you're coming to a high note and then you've got to get off that high note and sing a long phrase, you need a certain amount of breath to be able to take a proper inhalation and all of that. As far as this particular production, I was just glad to be asked to do it a second time because it's a lot of, and not just the work of learning it and getting the interpretation together and all of that, but the emotional investment. I mean, it's Macbeth. You don't just sort of do a drive-by with Macbeth. You really dig into it.
The late composer based in Chicago for much of his career, Ralph Shapey, who we regard as sort of a patron saint of this program, Critical Thinking, often pointed out that Schoenberg had the Society for Private Performance as a means of putting on new and unusual pieces without having to worry about selling the tickets or would the audience like it or not. And Ralph would say,
We don't need that. We need a society for second performances.
Because if you're a composer or a performer, it's great to add a new role or have a new work, but you want to then start climbing deeper into it, right? If you're going to do in the course of your career, who knows how many Don Giovannis, and you might do both Don Giovanni and Leporello over time. So, but how many times do you get to be Bloch's Macbeth or Bloch's Lady Macbeth, Susan?
Every time you repeat a role, it is always fun to have someone else spur some new thoughts, whether it's a co-worker or, you know, co-star or the conductor or the director. Or I find the process of rediscovery very interesting. You can never erase what you already experienced or what you already know, but you can certainly add more to it. And yeah, if there are specifics, I agree with Edmund. Lucky enough that if there are specifics I need vocally or whatever to happen musically so that things work, that tends to, most people are open to that idea. But it's fun, I have to say, Edmund, it's really fun to be doing this together with you again as we explore the relationship, and with Andreas again, and then we have this new venue, and then also this new conductor and these new witches. And so we take what we found before, and we get to grow it some
more. And new audiences too.
Yes.
Right. So that's Susan. Those of you who don't have the video portion, Susan is really getting happy and excited. She started off at a high point, but Andreas, it must be nice to have enthusiastic cast members on this level.
Well, enthusiastic, but also, you know, singers who are not only singers but actors, because I think that piece really, of course, you need to be able, you know, it's a given that you need to be able to express it vocally, but I think a lot of it really depends on how you express it physically and as an actor. And so I'm very fortunate to work with these two wonderful people who bring just a lot to the table to start with.
The table, so to speak.
Yeah. The table, so to speak.
The program is Critical Thinking, and we're speaking with Andreas Mitasek, who is directing this new production of Ernest Bloch's Macbeth at the Harris Theater, September 13 through 21. If you're listening to the initial broadcast on September 8th of our program, or if you're listening online at any time before the 21st, we encourage you to check it out, Chicago Opera Theater, theater spelled ER.org. We'll give you all kinds of information. We have links on our own page, WFMT.com/critical thinking, where you can hear this or any of our other programs any time. 98.7 WFMT in Chicago and WFMT.com around the world and into outer space at any time. I'm Andrew Patner. We're also speaking with Enmon Ford, that's N-M-O-N, and Susan Hansen, that's S-U-Z-A-N-H-A-N-S-O-N.
Yeah. sait ce que je fais, j'ai peur. Quand elle est regardée encore une fois, je n'ose pas.
Andreas, one of many things that Chicago Opera Theater does and has been doing long before some of the older, bigger companies followed suit is to build up a number of activities around productions. And you very often will have a film or a presentation of scenes, a cabaret, and always interesting lectures as well. Some of that will already have happened by the time this broadcast is up Monday, September 8th, but there are certainly things coming. One of them is another retelling of the Macbeth story, one of the greatest of all time, and that is Kurosawa's Throne of Blood with Toshiro Mifune, I think, as I recall, and that's going to be at the Music Box Theater up at Southport and Addison, or just above there, between Addison and Irving Park, Sunday the 14th at 11:30. And then there are also going to be pre-performance talks an hour before curtain For three of those, the Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday, Andreas Mitasek will be talking. But you also have some guy named Ernest Bloch II, who is going to be speaking before opening night, which is Saturday, September 13th. Tell us a bit about the things that will be surrounding this production.
Well, doing an opera is always a great opportunity for us to bring in different people, have some collaborations like with the Music Box. I think the Throne of Blood is an amazing movie, so we wanted to make sure we could show that in context of the opera. And Ernest Bloch II, the grandson of Ernest Bloch, he and his family will be joining us for opening night, so I have invited him to participate in the pre-opera talk.
And they're not just blood relations, they're also very active in Bloch's legacy and in making sure his works are published and performed and that people have some idea of his own perspective, in part because he really was quite withdrawn and reclusive in his later decades. He loved the topography and the feel of the Northwest, and he liked to spend his time by himself on the beach or polishing stones.
Polishing stones, and, you know, I was fortunate to have been presented with one of these little stones by Ernest Bloch when we did the production in Long Beach. Ernest Bloch, the composer, lived in Oregon for a long lifespan, about 20 years, and he was fortunate enough that his living, so to speak, was underwritten, so he could dedicate his life just to compose.
Yeah. We should mention, too, that Bloch was the first director of the Cleveland Institute of Music, one of the major conservatories in the country or anywhere, and then he also went and headed the San Francisco Conservatory, which is having a renaissance right now with a new president and dean coming out of Oberlin Conservatory. And so he really was someone who was in the fabric of American musical life, but in part because he was an outsider, in part because he was who he was, and he wasn't a big self-promoter, we don't always have him in the way that we have other composers in our minds or have senses of them. Edmund and Susan, why don't you tell us a little bit about your own backgrounds and what other projects you have coming up?
I grew up in Minnesota, but now I live in Los Angeles. My background, I watched my dad as an opera singer in Minneapolis. Turns out I was watching, I didn't know it at the time, but rather avant-garde opera. So I've always been really interested in opera theater.
Parents, note, take your children to live performances,
yes,
and they won't forget them, and you may help shape them and push them along.
Yeah, I was lucky that way.
Where did you study?
I did a Bachelor of Music at St. Olaf College, mm-hmm, and then I went to New York and did an MFA in acting at NYU.
Oh, wow. So you already were plotting out, mm-hmm, intentionally or otherwise, this variety. Mm-hmm. Did you sing in the choir, the famous St. Olaf choir?
I did. I was soloist when I was there, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. Yeah. And Edmund, you're from Southern California, right?
Born and raised just outside Los Angeles. Both my parents had musical backgrounds as far as studying and performing. I think my mom sang and played piano, and dad's played piano. They were very encouraging. I saw an opera on television when I was in high school, and that pretty much did it. Mm-hmm. I went out and got recordings and sort of gave myself the bug and kept going with it. Went to USC in Southern California, got my bachelor's and my master's there in music, and then actually went on from there to get an MBA, which was a lot of fun.
Were you just really bored? Did you have a crisis? What happened?
No, I personally just believe in a certain kind of educational diversity, and I've always been interested in business as well.
Okay. So you had a genuine interest in business and numbers.
I did. Okay. Well, in business.
No, business, but not the numbers.
Yeah,
was
I'll leave the statistics
part
to somebody else. But, but yeah.
Spoken like a true CEO.
And there it is. But no, and also putting all of the things together, because I self-produce. I'm part of a group now that does electronic dance music and combines it with opera and other things. So
tell
all
us
of
about
that.
That.
It's called Uptronic. If anybody's listening who's going to be in Southern California on October 18th, we have a show there. But no,
Optronic.
It's actually Optronic.
Optronic.
O-P-T-R-O-N-I-C. Okay. But anyway, the idea of that is to combine a lot of different types of music that the three of us who are in the group perform. So we have a DJ and we have a soul singer, and then I bring in soulful house as well as classical.
Sounds like critical thinking, but yeah, okay.
In a way, right. In a way, yeah, because I know you can all go a little bit outside
right?
of classical.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, that sort of eclectic way of thinking just is what has sort of fueled everything I've done. So in opera, in different things, it's like Susan has the whole acting thing and other things she's done. It really is a melange of different things that all come together.
I know that Andreas also has an interest in the marketing side of new arts, and I think we now have your next, not that you don't have wonderful slogans now, but we have your next slogan, Chicago Opera Theater, an eclectic way of thinking. You know, that might be, and doesn't that really characterize just the whole mission? And just with the three of you here, each of you does a number of things. Not that it's easy to do any one of those things, but each of you is not confined by a dictionary definition of opera singer, company director, producer.
Thanks, Andrew. That really describes Chicago Opera Theater very well. I might have to get your write-off on that.
I stole it from Edmund.
I think, you know, that is also what brings new energy, new ideas to a form that has been around for quite a few years. And I think also that's what we aim for at Chicago Opera Theater.
If you want to know more, and we encourage you to know more, Chicago, it's one of these funny web domains because you have two O's next to each other, ChicagoOperaTheater.org. And you also can call for tickets and other information. The Harris Theater, 312-334-7777. HarrisTheaterChicago.org also gives you information. Tickets are very reasonably priced, from $35 to $125. There are four performances, Saturday, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday, starting on September 13th through September 21st. The Chicago Sinfonietta, great friends of WFMT and of Chicago, will be in the orchestra pit, or maybe they'll be hanging from the ceiling. I don't know. We won't know till we get there. And the Apollo Chorus will be, because there's choral music in here as
there's
well.
Very powerful choral music.
You need powerful, haunting choral music to make Macbeth. Think about how this story of all of Shakespeare's plays has attracted the psychological side of other artists, in part because it is so focused, but it's also so abstract. It can take place in Japan. It can take place today. It can take place in Italian. It can take place in English. And the power and the enigma, as Susan said earlier, are always important. It's a great pleasure to always to talk with Andreas Mitasek, and it's a great pleasure to meet, at least in our studios, we've met them on stage in the past, Susan Hansen and Enman Ford, who will be portraying Mrs. and Mr. Macbeth. Andreas, Susan, Enman, thank you so much for coming in, and toy for next week.
Thanks. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us, and see you all at the opera.
music that we heard tonight, all from Ernest Bloch, and all directly or adapted, extracted by him from his opera Macbeth. We opened with Lady Macbeth, O vous ministres de meurtre, O you ministers of death, and the lady was soprano Sonia Borowski Tudor. We then heard midway through from the same recording, Le Sommeil Innocent, The Sleep of Innocence, Macbeth and Lady Macbeth, baritone Hannu Niemelä was singing again with Sonia Borowski Tudor. That's from the second recording and the first ever live staged opera production recording, which also was the German premiere in 1998 in Dortmund. The Philharmonic Orchestra of Dortmund, Alexander Rumpf was the conductor, and that appeared on the Capriccio label in 2001. Complete recording in German of Ernest Bloch's Macbeth. And we close with one of the two interludes that Bloch prepared in 1919 from the full opera, orchestral interludes, the one for Act One. And that was from a recording by a Bloch disciple, Dahlia Atlas Sternberg, who was or still is perhaps president of the Ernst Bloch Society of Israel. A recording made in Surrey in England, the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Ms. Sternberg and recorded in 1996. That's on the ASV label, an album of orchestral works by Bloch featuring the symphony in E-flat from late in his life and American period in the 1950s, as well as three Jewish poems, etc. And I think that album may now be available on the Naxos label as well. We want to thank Shannon Freezer of Carol Fox and Associates for helping us to put this program together, Andreas Mitasek, Edmund Ford, and Suzanne Hansen, of course. Matt DiStefano recorded the program and made it sound great. Our renewing funder, thank you so much to Alpha Wood Foundation for many years of support and for renewing their support for the coming year, as well as other friends of this program. Drop us a line anytime. Let us know what you thought of this or any of our other programs, RENTAP, R-E-N-T-A-P, that's Patner spelled backwards, at AOL.com. You can go to the WFMT Facebook page anytime, comment or raise any inquiries there. And WFMT.com/critical thinking will take you to the always free Critical Thinking podcast of this or any of our other programs. I'm Andrew Patner. We'll see you at Macbeth, and we'll see you next week.